Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast of Who's Here in the Hamptons. I'm Dan Rettina, your host, broadcasting from my home in the Hamptons, where I have lived for over 55 years. I've written a dozen books about this glorious place, and I've seen it grow through the years from small tourist towns, quaint fishing villages, and a summer playground for high society to what it is today, a world-class resort for celebrities, artists, musicians, authors, and billionaires. In my podcast, I will bring you interviews with not only these people, but also prominent local people who have helped shape the Hamptons. Welcome to Dan's Talks. My guest today is Paul Monte. Paul is an active resident of Montauk. I've known him much of my life. He's been involved in numerous businesses. He was the president of the Chamber of Commerce recently in Montauk. And what we're going to talk about is the Montauk Manor, where on the ground floor of this vast English castle, there is Monte's at the Manor, a restaurant opened about 2 years ago. First of all, let's talk a little about the manor itself. It's, I think, coming up on its 100th anniversary.
Yes, 100 years coming up next year, I believe.
Yep. It's built high on a hill in Montauk, overlooking the railroad station and downtown and the ocean and the bay. So it's got a view you can just, there is. And I recall going there for the first time when I was a teenager, and it was the interior lobby, which is the size of, say, King Cullen.
Yeah.
Was fitted out as an English Tudor castle that had rugs on the walls. And I'm sure this is just in my head, but I seem to remember seeing suits of armor or something to that effect.
Could very well be. Could be.
And off to one wing, there was a writing room, which was huge, where you could go to write letters to your friends. It was the size of New York Public Library inside. That's since been made into apartments. And at the other end was the big dining room, which was fitted out with all the necessary tools and so forth. And during the time the manor was in business, there were waitresses, some of whom I dated, that property.
There's still a few around.
Yeah, and then the manor went into becoming derelict for a good 20 years. And at that time, it was revived several times to no effect. But the most recent was an effort to make it a condominium. And I think they turned 150 rooms or 200 rooms into, what is it, about 90 now?
No, they have about 140 condo units now.
And tell us a little bit about how you got the idea for this as a restaurant. I know your history is running things for tourists and public. So how did this come about for you?
Before we start, I don't know if it's appropriate or not, but maybe we should both be wearing a hat like this for the call. I don't want to steal your identity, Dan, but you know, I look pretty good in a hat too, so.
Yes, you do. you need a small beard and you.
Anyway, I also have a long history with the Montauk Manor, going back to 1968 when my family moved to Montauk. I was a 10 or 11 year old boy at the time and lived on Essex Street. And one of the things that myself and my young friends used to do was run up the road up to the Montauk Manor, which was abandoned at the time, and climb through the windows and run through the hallways and through the kitchen and the dining room. And the one thing that always amazed me was the size of the coffee urns in the restaurant kitchen there were taller than me. And I wasn't a big boy, but to me, that was just like I could have taken a bath in the coffee if they had coffee in those urns. So, but myself and some of the older kids and the teenagers used it sort of as a hangout back in those days because it was just such a big, wide open expanse with multiple floors and, you know, a surprise around every corner. And when they left it, I mean, there were still tablecloths, there were still dishes in the kitchen, there was still all of the, you know, amenities and accoutrements that you would need to run a hotel or a restaurant. So from that point on, that building and that whole history always amazed me. And Over the years, as you said, it's been a hotel and it finally turned into a condo, which has been very successful and all of the units are owned. But the small restaurant space there has been probably 15 or 16 iterations over the years. And in my opinion, that restaurant space needed to be brought back to fit into the grandeur and the uniqueness of that property. So, my history in the hospitality business has been long and storied, over 50 plus years working at Gurney's and running my own businesses, nightclubs, restaurants, pizzerias, etc., and eventually being the CEO and general manager at Gurney's for 25 plus years. So I had my hands full and I was a busy man throughout my career. I eventually retired when we ultimately sold Gurney's back in 2013. I helped for a few years through the transition, retired for 2 years, spent some time in Florida, worked on my golf game, which wasn't getting any better. And I woke up one day and said, you know what? I have to look for something to do because this is not me. At around the same time, I heard that the restaurant at the Manor was coming up for lease again. So an old friend of mine who lived there, Claire Ratouche, called me and said, I think this is a perfect fit. You're not doing anything right now. Why don't we talk? So I had a couple of conversations with the folks there, and ultimately they chose another operator initially, but the other operator never went to fruition. So they called me in a panic and said, would you still be interested? And I said, well, I guess I am. I said, I have a vision. I think I can do a good job. And we made a deal. And so 2.5 years ago, we spent some time renovating the place, redecorating it, making it feel like a part of the manor, as opposed to a beach cafe or a Jamaican restaurant or some of the other things that it has been over the years. So we took our guidance from the restaurant that my parents had opened in Brooklyn in 19, not my parents, my grandparents had opened in 1906 in Brooklyn, which was a restaurant called Monty's Venetian Room down on Carroll Street, as you know very well, I'm sure. So that restaurant was red vinyl booths and Italian murals on the wall and sort of earlier version of Cheers where everybody knew your name and everybody gathered from politicians to gangsters to celebrities to everyday community folk. And that's what we wanted to create at Monty's, a good Italian restaurant that gave you good home cooked meals, good portions, good prices, and where you could always feel at home. And that's what we did.
And it's been a big success.
It's been very welcomed by the community as well as the homeowners there and the transient visitors who come to visit Montauk. Quite a few of them make it a point to come up the hill and have dinner with us.
Describe the inside of the dining room there. Was
Well,
it?
it's a very small dining room. We only have about 40 seats in the dining room, but it's very cozy. We've got banquettes, we've got, nice wooden furniture. We got nice brick on the walls. We also have a couple of glass garage doors which open up onto a beautiful courtyard, which we open in the summer and add another 40 seats out there. So we have outdoor dining. We created a beautiful lounge in the lobby with some more banquettes that are very cozy and a beautiful little 6-seat bar with a roaring fireplace. There's sports on the TV. There's Italian music playing in the background. It's just a place where you come, you settle in, and you just enjoy the ambiance and the camaraderie and the food and have a nice time.
Talk a little bit about the lobby and what that was like. I don't think you were old enough to remember that, actually.
No, not when it was open. I never, frequented it while it was open.
Has the lobby kept its look?
Oh, absolutely. It's the most gorgeous lobby. I mean, the architects that created the manor created some of the most wonderful and storied properties in Palm Beach in New York City. The Breakers, I believe, is the same company. I believe it was the Waldorf in New York City, or several of the big hotels were created by the same firm. And as we know, Carl Fisher, who, created Miami Beach, is the same man that created his dream summer vacation spot in Montauk, but was cut short by the Depression.
Tell us a little of that history.
Sure. Carl Fisher was an entrepreneur, quite a character from what I've read and heard. Came out of Indianapolis, I believe. Founded the Indianapolis 500. Made his millions by purchasing the patent for the headlight for the automobile. And that was, I guess, 1918, 1920, somewhere in that area, maybe a little earlier. And he became quite a developer and quite a gadfly. And, you know, he created Miami Beach. He had the vision down there. They still have Fisher's Island down there where he passed and lived and passed. But his dream was Montauk was going to be the summer destination for all of those folks that went to Florida in the winter. And funny coincidence, Montauk, Carl Fisher, the original Gurney's property, Mr. and Mrs. Gurney, had a small inn in Florida. And they were friendly with Carl Fisher. And he convinced them to open an inn in Montauk also to create more rooms for transient visitors. So the original Gurney's was started in 1926, the same year that the Montauk Manor was being built. So the fact that Gurney's was there, and that's what brought my family to Montauk in 1956, and the fact that the Montauk Manor restaurant became available when I was moving in a different direction away from Montauk and brought me back to Montauk full-time and to go into business, it's a funny coincidence the way that it all happened.
Glad to have you back, that's for sure.
Well, thank you, Dan. Thank you.
One of the stories about Carl Fisher is he also, before he came to Montauk, he created the Lincoln Highway, which connected the East Coast with the West Coast, entirely paved in the 1920s.
Yep.
Filling in some the gaps. The headlights that the patent he bought, they were able to create a vacuum in the headlight itself. So it was shown much brighter. And everyone who had made an automobile had to buy that.
Yep.
And when he was up here, I lived in Montauk and was in that building numerous times when it was open. But my dad, who owned a drugstore in Montauk back then, also had the concession on the manor.
So really?
We had a little booth where we had, you know, candy and magazines and stuff. But it was right off the lobby to the restaurant area. And right through until you would have been known about this, the Army took it over in World War II.
Yeah.
This building, which was the, what you would call not too legal, you know, it was pretty down building that sagged. And after the war ended, it became, when the manor reopened, it became the dormitory for the waitresses and waiters who worked it. And it, incidentally, the and one of the big attractions that Fisher put in, which was, I think, part of the grand part of his scheme, was on the hill overlooking Montauk, which is where it was looking down. You looked primarily to the west to the railroad station, so people coming in from the train could actually walk up a steep hill or be picked up and driven up. But our way up, he built this tennis court building, glass roof. They had, over the years, besides tennis tournaments, they had tennis available for the manor. It was like the keystone of Montauk in a way, because it was so unusual.
Yep, yep.
Built, as you know, the surf club, which had a boardwalk, which was swept away, in a polo field, and Avenue. We had a house on South Fairview Avenue. He built about a dozen of these half-timber old English houses. My dad bought one of them when I spent my teen years. And that road, which circled the golf course, actually, was a racetrack as well.
Exactly.
So it was quite an adventure if you were back at that time.
There's an old video that I think it's on YouTube of one of those races.
And so Montauk is rich beyond belief as far as, you know, one of the changes in Montauk, which I thought was a bad change, I wonder what you thought about it, was the renaming of the county park in Montauk. Probably the most famous man who spent time in Montauk was Teddy Roosevelt.
Yep.
He was in an encampment for his Rough Riders. They had just returned from the Spanish-American War as victors. And they were in Montauk reorganizing for being out into the country. And many of them had gotten tropical diseases when they were in Cuba. So they were letting the, had no modern medicine, so they were letting them recover on the hills of Montauk. And Teddy had a tent there. And also his family came out and stayed at the third house, the first, yeah, third house way out by the point. And they renamed that park from being the Teddy Theodore Roosevelt Park to Suffolk County Montauk Park, I believe.
Which was a travesty. For the life of me, I can't understand why they did that. I think it was a real slap in the face to President Roosevelt. I think it was a slap in the face to Montauk, to be honest with you, because it was a rich part of Montauk's history.
And I wonder some other place that can, since that may not come back, how else can we? There ought to be, I think the his encampment with the Rough Riders was at Ditch Plains. That's clear.
Camp Wyckoff, right?
Well, the Camp Wyckoff covered virtually all of Montauk.
Yeah.
And but where Teddy's unit was he was only a major, I guess, where the generals were up at the third house. And incidentally, he was visited there by a president of the United States.
With
the
yes, McKinley. Exactly. Yep.
You see him in front of the tent. So it's planes.
I think the lame excuse they used was the fact that Teddy never slept in third house, but it was really besides the point.
I think he did, by the way. He invited his wife and a couple of his kids out.
I'm sure he did.
The third house in the writings of the time, one of the kids slept in Teddy's tent with him.
Well, I have a soft spot for that property as well, because you probably remember my family owned the Deep Hollow Ranch for a few years back in the 70s. And we would still own it today if it weren't for the county deciding that they wanted to take it by eminent domain and make a park out of it. So I spent many years as a wrangler down there, taking out trail rides and breaking horses and doing all kinds of things. I was a cowboy at the oldest cattle ranch in America, right there at Deep Hollow Ranch.
Anything else you want to talk about? We're up over 20 minutes.
Yeah, I know. You and I could go on for 20 hours probably, but
we'll come out and see. Are you there every day at the Winter Restaurant? Or?
Not every day. We're only open 4 days a week right now. And when it gets real cold up here, I like to take a little run down to Florida to warm up my bones and then come back. So I'm usually up here half of the month and then down there half of the month in the wintertime. Summertime, I'm around all the time.
In the meantime, it's open. The restaurant's open, what, 5 p.m. to 11?
Yes. Yeah, we open for dinner at 5 p.m. from Friday through Monday. And summertime, we're open 7 days, breakfast, lunch, dinner. That's the full boat there. So I would love to have you come out and see the space and experience it and chat some more. Mm-hmm. And when you have another spot on your podcast, we can go on to part two with the Montauk history for sure.
Thank you, Paul. Good to talk to you.
Same here. Always great to see you, Dan.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.